B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no-good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Mel. Nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's hour number two on the Agenda Free Friday. It's brought to you by friends at the Bernardi Auto Group. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life. BernardiAutoGroup.com. Back to your phones. We got Maz and Murray in our TD Garden studios, our Star Market broadcast studios at the Garden in advance of Bruins Leafs tonight, Game 5. That'll be on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We also have Celtics Pacers in the Beasley family at 105.7 WROR. Back to the phones. As promised, Dave and Wellesley on that ratings topic. Go ahead, Dave.
So I'm not sure how much of an effect this has on the ratings per se, but I think unequivocally the Bruins are the most passionate, authentic, genuine fan base in Boston. I honestly don't even think it's close. So I think there's an element to that. I'm sticking with the team. And I think even when you're down 4-1 in a hockey game, it's not impossible. It's actually possible and plausible that you could come back as opposed to a 20-point deficit in a basketball game. And I just have to say, anecdotally, you know, Wednesday I'm at the bar and my, you know, having a glass of wine watching the Celtics, and these Bruins fans are like galvanizing. It's intoxicating. The hard hat punching the clock. It's tonight I will be watching the Bruins, is my point. And I think there's an element to that which is sort of hard to not discuss.
Yeah, there's no question about it. They're the most relatable fans. I think they're they're my favorite fans in town. You know, not that they don't have their moments either, but I think they're the most relatable team and the most relatable fans. That's absolutely true. But that's not why they win in the ratings. And the comeback thing, I don't necessarily agree with you. I think 20-point comebacks happen.
I think you get that one totally backwards, actually, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's it either. But I think there is, if you want to tell me when they drop the puck, you don't know who's going to win the game. That's a compelling thing. That's a compelling, to not know who's going to win a game. And in hockey, like, that is, there is a randomness to it that you got to earn it that night. That is unlike, well, baseball's like that. But I think there's something to basketball and football where, you know, depending on situation, home floor obviously is a massive one, or what happened the previous day or things like that. These NBA games, especially the first two rounds, I mean, 90% of them, you know what's going to happen. Maybe the Celtics one tonight is a little bit of a, you know, maybe you don't know what's going to happen tonight. The Celtics should roll. They should. They're much better, but they're unproven on the road, and you know, so you don't quite know there with the Celtics. But usually in these first two rounds, they're just obligatory. They're rote. And oh, by the way, even if they aren't, you can tune in the fourth quarter and get pretty much everything you need in a basketball game. In hockey, it could be won or lost in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I was saying, as the caller put it, well, you can come back from a 4-1 deficit, but basketball, 20 points is 20. I think it's the opposite. I think 20 points in basketball can be wiped out in 5 seconds if it's all about who has more talent. And look at the Celtics game the other night. It was 12. It wasn't 20. But the Celtics dug in, and Indiana couldn't do anything about it. And the Celtics won the game, I don't want to say going away, but at the end, Indiana's chucking the ball out of bounds like you're getting all these stupid-ass plays. So I think, to me, the predictability thing is huge. And the Bruins-Leafs, I mean, that's a coin flip. This series has been a coin flip. It's great theater. And so, this to me has been a good series so far. You know, it's been back and forth. Even the games really have been, there have been some back and forth to them, particularly the last one. And so I just, you can't take your eyes off it.
We've got Kevin in New York on this topic. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Mike, how's it going? So I think the likability is huge. Like, I think to a few years ago when the Celtics had Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley, and we had the same dilemma, right? And I was switching back and forth. And this year I will only be watching the Bruins. And a lot of it is because I'm sick of the Celtics drama. And as you say, the Bruins, to a T, every guy on the team's likable. Even when we're annoyed with Tuca, you got to still love him. So that's a big factor.
Well, that's interesting. Have the Celts become less likable? Murray, I'll start with you. Yep. Are they less likable, and has it hurt them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I agree with the caller completely. I think the likability factor of these teams, and that includes the Red Sox, is certainly a factor, and that's why the numbers are the way that they were the other night. The Celtics have mostly underachieved this whole season and have been a disappointment, not just locally, but nationally, and people don't trust them. Bottom line, they don't trust this team, and I don't blame them.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the year the Celtics had during the regular season hurt them. And when I say the year, I mean on the floor and off. All the stoogery and the infighting, and it's great for us and it's good to talk about. But fans are looking at it, and there's nothing worse than an underachiever, and you get disgusted by that.
Agenda Free Friday, everything on the table. Bob and Needham on the NFL Draft. What do you got, Bobby?
Felger, first of all, did you look up the thesaurus and wrote is your new word for the day? And you've said it like six times, but anyway, non sequitur. Mommy, this is for you. I met Belichick at that bar in Star Wars. He told me he's going to go D end or tight end unless Luke Skywalker or Han Solo is going to be there at 32. So let's start speculating about it. They always throw you a curveball. For all we know, they're going to trade the third rounders for 10 fourths and 10 fifths because they can get more picks to load up for next year. That's what he always does. He never goes. If they have the number 32 pick by the end of this draft, I will be shocked because they never keep it. He's going to, and everyone will be disappointed and say they didn't even keep the 32nd pick.
Let me tell you what, Bob, I think you're wrong. I'm just going to stop you there. I think they've drafted a lot at 31, 32. They may have traded out of 31 and 32, and I'm going to put 31 on that list as well. They may have traded out of those spots less than any other spot they've ever had. Mankins was 31, 32. I mean, there's been a million guys 31, 32 on this
Dominique
team.
Dominique Easley.
I think there's something about that spot they don't mind. You know, you get a fifth year with that rookie option, but you're still getting quote-unquote first-round talent. I mean, I think they like that spot right down there. And I'm not saying they kept it every year, but in my mind's eye, I feel like they've made a lot of picks down there.
Well, with the salary slotting, right? You basically get a second round salary, and you get the fifth year on top of it. It's a good place to pick for them.
Well, Bob says, you know, let's stop speculating. Never, Bob. What the hell are we supposed to do? It's the whole fun of the whole thing is to speculate. Mark in Medford, go ahead, Mark.
Hey, first off, I'll tell you why the ratings were better for the national broadcast in Boston than Nesson. Jack freaking Edwards. Between his tumbling muffins and his cans of corn, it sounds like he's calling a game between the bakery department and the produce department at Star Market. Okay? First off, Mike, it's the NHL playoffs all the way this time of year. They wipe out everybody. I mean, like Maz said, they leave it on the line to win that cup. I mean, that's the only trophy you get to put your name on, and it's there forever. Even if you don't make it to the Hall of Fame, your name is still there on that thing.
No, there's no question. It's a good product. The competition, you know, even in the playoffs, the NBA, the competition level, again, especially first two rounds, can be kind of spotty. You know, it just is. It just doesn't have it. The first two rounds in the NBA are borderline useless. They really are. You should get a good one next series, Bucks and Celtics. But typically speaking, there's really not much there. And I don't mean to bash Jack. Jack's good. I like him. I think he slips. It really boils down to me. Is the ref whining? I don't want to hear about you crying about the refs. I don't. And it's night and day, really, when you go when you go back and forth. And the Celtics, it's obviously more dramatic. But you know, those national broadcasts are just far less clunky. It's far less being weighed down by that call. And it's just really more about the actual game itself. And so that's why I always go to those national ones. Pat is in Worcester. He's up next on the Bruins. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I would like to go back first a couple of callers and disagree with Mr. Glass of Wine at the bar watching the Bruins there, because I hate Jack Edwards. I think he's the biggest homer there is in the NHL, and I grew up as a NHL fan in Buffalo listening to Rick Jeanneret. And then my point on the goaltending in the series, I would contend that Frederik Andersen has given the Leafs the better goaltending so far. But my question to you guys would be, moving forward, which goaltender is more important to the success of their team, Andersen or Rask, because I think the only way the Bruins lose now is if Rask becomes a puddle. So I'll get your take. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so look, they're on the ropes in this series as it is, and he hasn't been a puddle. Rask has been good. He hasn't been through the roof. He hasn't been great. I'm not telling you he's stolen any games, but Rask, on balance, this series has been good.
Overall, Andrew, though, I agree with the caller in that Anderson's been better.
Okay, I was going to say, who do you give the check mark to this series? I would also give it to Andersen, but I would also say, now just answering the third thing, who's more important? I think Rask is, because I think that Toronto has shown the ability to put more consistent offensive pressure on the Bruins than the other way around. I think Rask is going to be needed more than Andersen is.
I mean, I wonder if the two of them are equally important. I know that's a total cop-out, but Anderson crapped his pants last year in Game 7, too. Like, that could just as easily happen. Statistically, if it matters to you,
yes,
Rask has actually been better, right? Rask is 921 save percentage. Anderson's 917. Now, I'll tell you that I look at that and I say...
That's probably the difference of, like, one or two saves.
Okay, right. Really, it's that narrow. And also, I would say Anderson has played better, and here's why. I can think of two really soft goals that Rask allowed, and I can't think of any that Anderson allowed. So I think of the one with that little thing at the post when he didn't move and Krug sat there.
Oh, brutal.
And, that goal was absolutely awful. And then the one that Matthews scored the other night that cut through him. Like, those two stick out to me. I'm probably being more critical of him than I am of Anderson just because, you know, he's the local guy. But I don't really remember many goals or any goals in this series where I said, ooh, they got lucky there. Anderson should have had that.
Okay, we got Agenda Free Friday here. Maz and Murray from our Star Market TD Garden Studios at the Garden. I'm in parts unknown. We continue with your thoughts. We'll reset our Red Sox. Now, see, normally, this is sort of odd. The Red Sox getting off to the start that they have has made them a more compelling product. I am more prone to having that game on somewhere, on a phone or a laptop or something as a third screen to keep an eye on the Red Sox than I would be if they were off to if they were 13-6, Maz, I'd totally ignore them. If they were 13-6, I'd say do the Red Sox on your own time and you know. But now that they're 6-13, and in my opinion, they're playing for their season this weekend. If they get swept this weekend, they're done. Done. It's over. I'm with Murray. It's over.
Nothing like a car wreck.
So, right, exactly. I think you got to keep your eye on the car wreck that is the Boston Red Sox. That topic right after these words.
Stay tuned for more Bruins Game Day. From the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
From the center of the hockey universe, is Bruins Game Day. Live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We just got to keep working, keep preaching. You know, we know what we have to do, you know, as a group, you know, from the coaching staff to the players. So, you know, we keep talking the game, preaching, try to get better, and it will get better. So, yeah, I mean, there's no time to tell. Obviously, the sooner the better, you know. Trust me, I'm not saying that let's wait a month and fix this, but we're working on it on a daily basis. You know, it just, you know, right now the results, you know, is they're not out there in the field.
All right, let's get a Red Sox thought here in a second. I just want to update something I gave you on the rating stuff. Again, I said the numbers that I had, I meant to do the segment yesterday and we never got to it. So those are overnight ratings. I guess the final ratings are in, which are different than overnight ratings. And there's a clarification on the Nesson NBC Sports thing, which I found interesting. Just because I was just tooling around the internet during the break and Chad Finn has posted something on Boston.com. So I said I think the Bruins combined for an 8-4, something like that. It was really a 7-9, but they still won. They still won the night, and NBC Sports Network still beat Nesson. Except, here's what Nesson is saying is the reason. Nesson said its ratings were affected by an error in the cable listings on multiple providers, including Comcast Xfinity, Verizon Fios, and DirecTV, that said Nesson was showing a Bruins in 2 re-air from 2013 rather than the game. So the game didn't show up on your guide or your menu or whatever, you know, the TV listings, and that hurt their rating is what they're saying. Nesson said that in the previous 7 Bruins first-round playoff games that also aired nationally, it averaged 85 to 90% of the audience. Wednesday night, it got 49% of the audience. Tellingly, Nesson won 5 of the last 6 quarter hours, suggesting that viewers, misled by their cable guide, eventually realized the game was on Nesson and switched over. So I just thought it'd be fair to point that out. I don't remember there being many shared games. I always thought it was Nesson exclusives in the first round. But anyway, Maz.
So, no, look, what I can tell you is that that actually happened. I mean, that's accurate because it happened to me. So when I punched up my menu the other night, it did show Bruins in two, and I went, oh, must not be on Essen. So I watched it. I mean, I looked anyway, and I realized it was a national game, and I had that option. I was going to watch the national game, but I remember specifically the menu saying Bruins in two.
Okay, so that is a porking for the Essen folks. Anyway, Maz, on the Red Sox, Murray has already buried him. Murray has the Red Sox done for the year, put a fork in him. I am on the verge, meaning if they get swept this weekend, they're done for me, as far as I'm concerned. You're still not there. You're still not there.
No, I'm not there because, again, it's just too early. And when I say, I know I'm sort of walking a line here between April being relevant, because I do believe it's relevant, and also, you know, it being April 19th, and I can't bury them in good conscience on April 19th. I just can't bring myself to do it. So is it an important weekend? Sure. And I think you're starting to see them act now, or maybe react is a better way to say it, because they put, you know, they released Erasmo Ramirez today. Pedroia goes on the DL. Nunez goes on the DL. They've brought up Su-Wei Lin. Not that that's anything. The one that should catch your attention is Chavis. Michael Chavis has been called up. And so this is a guy that was a high draft pick, was a complete bust in the minors until a couple of years ago, and mysteriously all of a sudden he started hitting all these home runs. Then he got popped last year for PEDs. He came back and actually played well, and he last I checked, he was off to a pretty good start in the minors, so they're bringing him back. So they're looking for some sort of spark, is the point.
Feels desperate.
It is desperate. There's no question it's desperate. You know, the fact that they released Swihart was desperate. I mean, they're 18 games in, 19 games in, and they're having to do all these little roster maneuvers that aren't necessary in most cases, but they're trying to ignite the team in some way, shape, or form. And the other thing I would keep an eye on with Chavis is, and I want to see where they play him, maybe this is a kick in the ass to Rafi Devers. Because Chavis is a third baseman by trade. Devers hasn't played well here in the early part of the year.
So he's already a lost cause then?
Well, not a lost cause, but if you don't get your ass in gear, we're going to play someone else. Or we're going to try to play someone else. So, and I don't mind that. I mean, this team needs a little bit of that because they look way too complacent.
Okay, Maz, if they lose 2 or 3, what do you come out of the thing saying?
I'm not burying them on Monday.
Maz, they have the Rays actually in 6 of their next 10. Woo-hoo. So what if they go 2-4, 1-5 against them? It's over. It's over.
Yeah, over, man. It's over.
I'm not burying them on Monday. I'll tell you that right now. if this goes on for another week and they are, you know, I don't know, 8 and whatever that is, okay, 8 and 18, then I'm like, I start to wonder if they can turn it around. So tonight they're going to get that whole Tampa Bay opener nonsense. So you're going to get 9 different pitchers, for crying out loud. And then tomorrow, Porcello goes. I don't feel good about that one. Sunday is Price. So, you know, somehow they got to find a way to get back. They're not this bad. There's no way they're this bad.
What if they're bad, though? Not this bad.
I'll let you know when we get there. I told you, I need another month. I need another month. They can't possibly be this bad. They have too many good players.
All right, folks, Red Sox on the table here on an agenda-free Friday. Everything on the board, as usual, depends on you, Bob. And Gloucester has a Patriots thought. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi, guys. I call every year, Mike, you know, about the Patriots schedule, their Thursday night games.
Oh, this, yeah, that's right.
8 years now of Thursday night football, and the Cheetahs in Foxborough, with that piece of garbage of an owner, has 2 road games in 8 years. Now they're home again this year. That means the last 7 years, 1 road game on Thursday night. That Cheetah owner in Foxborough deserves to be in jail, by the way.
Okay, that's a little strong. That's a little strong, Bobby, but is that really true? They've only played 1 road Thursday night game in 7 years?
In the last 7 years, 1 of their Thursday night game, not counting the home opener when you win the Super Bowl, they're not doing. 8-7, they opened the first Thursday night at the Jets, which is a real long trip. In the last 7 years, their only road game was at Tampa Bay.
Unbelievable.
And they lost. They won that game.
No, because the Tampa kicker kept missing. They should have lost. It was a suck-ass game. But that is something. How again, it's another fallacy that the good teams have harder schedules. How do the Patriots consistently get home Thursday night games? How is that possible?
It's
good question.
It's Goodell.
Trying to screw
him? Nobody ever bitches about that.
Right.
I mean, seriously, they bitch about everything else. How come they don't bitch about the fact that they're home on Thursday all the time?
He's trying to make sure we all get stuck in traffic. That's a work day. It's extra traffic. Blame Goodell.
Zach in Middleborough on the Boston Bruins. Hi, Zach. Go ahead.
Hey, Mike, you said Tuca's been good. I say he's been okay, you know, but we're splitting hairs. I think Halak has earned some ice time. You know, they platooned the goalies all year. They both played about 40 games, and Halak has been just about as good as Tuca, if not better. And as a Bruins fan, I have just as much confidence in Halak as I do in Tuca. And Tuca is not the type of workhorse goalie who's going to be able to play every other night for 2 months straight. So if you're going to make a run here, Halak's going to be in the mix, and I wouldn't mind seeing him in this series.
I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it now after Rask stopped 38 of 42 shots or something like that. They were all over him the entire game. And again, I'm not telling you he was Dominic Hasek or he stole you any game. He let up a bad goal, in fact, there to let Tampa back into the game. But he was good. He was good. You don't change your starting goalie when he's playing well. And Rask is playing well. Well enough, anyway.
I love how he says Halak has earned some ice time. Like, we're rotating defensive pairs. Like, so what do you want? You want Tuca to play the first 10 minutes? You want him to switch in the middle like they do in youth hockey? Like, what do you want him to do? The guy's playing fine. Leave him in. Don't mess with it.
We've got Nick and Marshfield on the ratings. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, what's up, guys? I think the ratings factor is the entertainment factor. I mean, the NHL playoffs, the speed, the physicality, not knowing what is going to happen next, that draws everybody in. I just wanted to give you my top five between the two teams, if that's all right.
Go ahead.
I would go Marchand, Marner, Bergeron, Matthews, Tavares. Sorry, Bruins fans, that's just the facts.
Okay, well, no, those are just your opinions, but we'll take them. Marchand, number one. Tavares is too lowly rated. People have underrated Tavares. And, you know, we overlooked him going into the series. That's an elite top end and a better two-way player than I think people give him credit for. He scores 47 goals. He's a huge offensive player, but he can play on all ends of the ice. He's a legit guy. And he's the one that's helped even this series, meaning his inclusion into that Toronto lineup has brought them even to you, where they might have been a little bit behind you to start this thing. We continue with your thoughts on Agenda Free Friday. Murray gives us an update first.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Broadcasting live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, it's Felger and Mann, Bruins Game Day, on your home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Where fans get to pick wins and losses.
Week 9 at the Baltimore Ravens. I bet that John Harbaugh will have a dirty trick up his sleeve. I hate him. I don't like that we gotta go there. This one scares me.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson's a loser, though.
I'm telling you, I don't like it. I got a bad feeling.
Loss. Week 10, bye week.
You know how I love a late bye. The later the bye, the sweeter the ride.
Yeah, you should put that on a shirt.
I can't. I need money for beers.
Week 11, at Philly against the Eagles.
This is already bringing back bad memories. Why did Bill bench Butler, huh? Why didn't we ever get an answer? Why didn't he play in the Super Bowl? I want to know.
Bill's got his reasons, and Bill we trust, bro, remember?
I'll never forgive him for that.
Loss. Week 12, home against the Cowboys.
Dak Prescott sucks, and what kind of name is Dak?
Yeah, it should be more like Yak Prescott, get it?
Yeah, because he's always puking on the field. He's a loser.
Win. Week 13, at the Houston Texans.
Why are we always playing these losers?
I don't know, but I'm glad we do because we always beat them.
Win.
Week 14, home against the Chiefs, bro.
Remember I cried at the end of the AFC Championship game? Best game I ever saw.
Then those loser Chiefs tried to change the overtime.
I bet Goodell still changes it. I hate him.
Win. Then weeks 15, 16, and 17, three lambs in a row, bro, at Bengals. Home for the Bills, then home for the Dolphins.
Win, 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 and then the seventh Super Bowl. Oh, thank heaven for number seven.
All right, 14-2. Our guys got him 14-2. Meanwhile, Robert Kraft's story. I think everyone's sort of holding their breath or keeping an eye out for that video. But Murray gave you the story that was on, what was it called? What was that website called, Murray?
The Blaze?
The Blast reports that they were contacted by an unknown or undisclosed individual with the Kraft video. And to prove it, that individual showed them a clip from the full video to prove that it was legit. And the website says it's legit. Kraft's attorneys. Not actually Kraft's attorneys. I think it might have been. Well, maybe it was Kraft's attorneys. I don't know. I thought it was in relation to the cases of the two gals, the operator and the owner. Either way, those set of lawyers went right in and then charged the prosecutors with misconduct, charged the prosecutors with contempt, said the prosecutors leaked the video, and they're the ones who are now leaking the video to these media outlets. At least one set of authorities, I think in Palm Beach, denied it, said no one has it, we've taken good care of it. They don't believe the report, is what the folks said down here in Florida. So either way, I believe the Blast. I mean, that they got an offer. And that it showed that. The only thing I'll just point out again is that the owners themselves had cameras set up. So, I just leave that small possibility open that what they're getting is a video feed from the owner. Because, again, when the authorities did that sneak and peek warrant and they did the phony bomb threat and they went in there and they installed their cameras, it was reported that they already found cameras that belonged to the spa owners. And they had, like, you know, it's sort of like an online security system where you have some cameras and you can dial it up on your phone and see what's going on in each room or, you know, throughout your business. And they had them all set up, and those were then confiscated. So maybe there's more than one set of video that's floating around out there. That's just a possibility. I don't know how real that is. No one's mentioned that. So maybe I have that totally wrong. But I do know it was reported at one point they found other sets of cameras there. So where do you think this is headed, Murray?
Oh, I think that this video is going to drop any minute. That's how I felt now for the last few days. And no matter how much he's going to try to get this thing squashed. And again, I completely understand. As much as I've wanted him to just say, look, I did it, two misdemeanors. We should have stopped talking about this thing a month ago. But I understand why he doesn't want to have this out, because it is embarrassing to him. It will alter how people look at him once people have the video. It just changes everything, like it did with the Ray Rice thing. Not that this compares, but you know what I mean. The video is the most damning thing. But I think it's going to be out any minute now, and there's nothing he can do to stop it.
So I wonder. I don't know. I still think ultimately the thing gets pled out, and I bet you the video gets buried and we never see it. I know that's a really naive thing to say, right? Because in this day and age, everything gets out. But given the type of power Kraft would have and the potential for a lawsuit there, oh, I bet you they're going to be really careful with that thing.
Do you think prosecutors leaked it?
No, I don't. And, I don't know who did, because I suppose there's a chance that the Blast is playing games and that they never really saw it. But they said, we've seen the video, and maybe it's all a way to sort of, again, leverage Kraft, threaten them a little, scare them, get the thing over with. Because they're wasting time, too, on this thing, I'm sure. They got better things to do than to have to drag out a second-degree misdemeanor case, or a first-degree misdemeanor case, as it were. But in any case, like, they have better things to do.
I mentioned this yesterday. I just think it's a little disingenuous by Kraft and his side, because it's not just about the indecency and the pornography and seeing him naked, which you're not going to see because it's going to be pixelated. Again, if it's released by the government, I can't speak to the black market stuff or anything that was taken by a spa owner. But the stuff that would come out from the Palm Beach prosecutors would be pixelated, heavily pixelated. So you wouldn't see anything. You wouldn't see, anyone's nether regions or the actual sex acts. So
you wouldn't see the actual
nope, you wouldn't see you wouldn't actually see that. It would be heavily pixelated, and that it'd just be a big blur. So what you would see, though, is Kraft coming in, hugging them, right? Because they're all hugs with these things. You'd see him, peeling off the hundies, and, sort of passing them out. And just sort of the way he interacts with them, I don't know, which is not pornographic, which is not indecent. It's just going to show him paying off a hooker. And if he's done nothing illegal, how come he doesn't want that? If he's done nothing illegal, then what's the harm of seeing what he did in that spa? Because he said he did nothing illegal, so let's see it. And part of it is my guess is that it's just going to look so filthy. And I'm not even talking about the sex. I'm talking about the interactions with the masseuses and the paying of the masseuses. Anyone with half a brain is going to look at that and go, yeah, he's paying for sex. He's paying for an R&T.
It'll look so cold. It'll look so cold and businesslike.
It's just going to – that's what it is. It's what happened.
Yeah.
And it's just going to show it. But again, you know, when you see it, it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, okay. And so it's not just the pornography. It's not just the invasion of privacy. It's that you actually get to see the crime. And as Matt Murray mentioned, we all know when you see it, it's different than reading the police report. And let's be honest, that's a big part of it too for him. So, anyway.
Sure. Again, yeah, what you're saying is we'll see the deal. We'll actually see the deal made. Right? Okay. And the visuals are all, you know, when people see it with their own eyes, because there's always that shred of doubt for anything. Like, I don't know if I believe it. When you see it, oh, the doubt's gone. You know.
Okay, so there's your craft update. If that video posts at any point in time, you will not see it on our social media feeds or the BZ Media Group social media feed. You will not see it on NBC Sports Boston. You'll have to go smutting somewhere else, but we'll talk about it if it drops, if it does come out. So there's that shoe to drop as well here on Agenda Free Friday. Coming up next, a giveaway for you, a Bruins giveaway, because I know you like free things, so stick around for that.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
From the center of the hockey universe, it's Felger and Mads. This is Bruins Game Day, live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Bruins try the left side and get it out to center ice. Heinen wheels in to the far point. High slot, Marchand fires, block coming in.
Yeah,
right corner on McAvoy. Center deflected, they score! Pounded home by Brad Marchand. Kemp right at the top of the crease. He buried it. 2-0 Bruins.
They're gamers. They know that they haven't been at the top of their game necessarily for a few games. So, listen, they were ready. They were in the hallway before the game talking about certain plays. Those guys are dialed in. They're pros. They're top-end players. They're Stanley Cup champions. So those are not guys you worry about very often.
It's Bruce Cassidy on Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron. You like that comment, Thomas?
I did, because I think it speaks to how Cassidy views them, right? Like, you know, listen, those guys are, they dig in. I don't have to worry about their compete. And, you know, think of that luxury as a coach, right? You get certain guys on your team who you never have to worry about them showing up. And I mean that from a competitive standpoint. You're not always going to get the production, but you're going to get the compete for the most part, which is what made that game three so striking, is that they don't get their asses kicked like that because they're too good, and B, they play too consistently. It was just so rare. And again, I'm just looking at it here. You know, Marchand overall, I mean, with the last game, and that was a big one, Marchand is the Bruins' leading scorer in the series. He's got 6 points. In fact, he's the leading scorer in the series overall. He's a +2. Like, and none of the, you know, none of the stupidity and stoogery and cheapness that has been in his game in other years. And, you know, that guy's an elite player now. Ultimately, he is going to produce.
Okay. So if this series comes down to the best players, which is what it looks like, boy, you know, we said it before. Who do you take? What the forward groups with these teams? You know, we said going in that Toronto had a deeper group, and I think they do. I think they're... third and fourth lines are more impactful than yours. But when you look at the top five or six forwards on each team, it's like throw them into a hat. I mean, again, draft the series. Marchand, Bergeron, Tavares, Marner, Pastrnak, Matthews, you know, but before you even get to guys like Nylander or Krejci, you know, I mean, they're just so even there, I think, in those first two lines that it's what group outplays the other. It's what group that, you know, that outplays the other. So we talk about matchups and getting Pastrnak away from Muzzin and Tavares and Bergeron and how the coaches do it. Jimmy, play Cassidy 6 first. Cassidy today talked about, it ain't about the coaches at this point.
I think there's some merit to that. I think it gets overrated at times. If our best players tend to outplay their best players, coaches look smart. If they don't, we look less smart, or pick your word. So, yes, I believe you want certain matchups, especially as it goes along. But I don't know. To me, it's get your best players out there. Get them in the right frame of mind. Best chance to succeed, you know, when you live with the consequences.
This is sort of what I talked about, you know, after that first game. It's like, is it on the players or the coach? Should Cassidy be running David Pastrnak away from Jake Muzzin, or should David Pastrnak be good enough to beat Jake Muzzin, who isn't even that good? And I think, you know, it's a little bit of both. But certainly going into the thing, I don't think anyone would have thought that Tavares and Marner would outplay Marchand and Bergeron. And in a couple games they have.
I mean, I certainly didn't see that coming. And look, I have respect for Tavares as a player, because when the Bruins were pursuing him, and I think we all did, we dug in a little and, you know, looked a little closer, and he had a reputation of being a guy who would fight for pucks and was a good all-around player. And I don't know, maybe he half-asses it a little during the regular season on the defensive end. He hasn't done that in this series. And so, honestly, I don't think we've even seen his best yet. Like, I feel like there's a night coming here where Tavares gets 2 goals and 2 assists. And I just hope it's not tonight. Like, he's going to have one of those games, I think, somewhere in there. Because, you know, he and Bergeron, to me, are pretty close to a wash.
Okay, let's also see how the Bruins come out. Because how they came out in Game 2 was still just, I mean, tremendous. And they haven't quite reached that peak, that physical peak. And again, no one expects them to do it for 7 games, but can you do it for another? Can you do it tonight? Bruce Cassidy talks about how they come out.
You know, we got to find the right buttons to push to make sure we're on time start. Shouldn't be an issue at home. We understand we've regained our home ice advantage we worked all year for. So, you know, understand the value of that. But, and then be in the moment of, hey, you know, let's win 1 game at home and then we'll worry about what comes next. So I think starts are important to us. It's shown in the 2 games we've won, and we got to make sure that we deal with that.
Okay, there's a little Bruins reset for you. I have a Bruins giveaway coming up in a few minutes, but back to your phones here. As promised, on an agenda-free Friday, Andrew and Haverhill on our ratings topic before. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Thanks. So I'm glad Maz mentioned that he couldn't find the game on Nesson either, because I was right with him and everybody else looking at the NBC game. And if Nesson would just get their act together, they wouldn't even have to be complaining about this, because I remember even, like, as recently as just a handful of years ago, I'm going on there looking for a game, and here we have our beloved Red Sox playing a meaningless game in April, is on Nesson, and I'm stuck here thumbing around my TV to find Nesson Plus for a playoff game, and it was so aggravating that at this point, you know, there's been 2 games NBC had on, game two on Saturday, we had to watch on NBC, which is great. And then we had the whole little snafu there the other night. And so as far as I'm concerned, both of our wins have been an NBC game for me. So you can just keep them on there the whole rest of the time. As far
okay,
as
what do we got? Are they on the Sports Network tonight, NBC Sports Network tonight? Or is it just Nesson? Do we know?
It's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're on NBC Sportsnet tonight at 7.
They are. So, I mean, I like Milbury. I like listening to Milbury. I think he, you know, he's a Bruin, but he sure doesn't act like it. He gives it to you straight on both. And that's, you know, I mean, you know me. I think it's obvious where I would go. I just prefer the neutral perspective from those national games. Joe in Rhode Island, go on the same topic.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Celtics versus the Bruins ratings. And it's really more of a thought specifically about the NHL fan experience versus the NBA fan experience. All the NHL has to offer the fans is the game. The NBA fan, in my opinion, cares almost as much about the game as they do the ass models, the tweet beef, the burner accounts that Durant is using, keeping up with Kyrie, and the real house husbands of the NBA. Thanks, guys.
Yep, a lot of nonsense in the NBA. I think it helps. I think it's a compelling league to follow and talk about. And, I, you know, as much as I mock it, I think there's always good things to talk about in the NBA. The actual game product, you know, I've said this for a long time. I'd rather talk about the NBA than watch the NBA. But I don't feel it. I think the NBA is a good product, and I feel a lot of these games are good, and so I'm not as down on the actual game as I used to be. But there is a lot of nonsense in that sport, no question about it.
And a lot of times the off-court nonsense can be – I'm sorry to cut you off, but the off-court nonsense can be really entertaining. And one of the things that's been – annoying about this Celtics team this year is all the off-the-court stuff has been annoying. It hasn't been entertaining. I mean, it maybe has been for us in terms of talking about, but I think your fans of the team, your real hardcores, they're sick of it.
I think it's a good point. When it's your team, it's not as fun. Yeah, talking about Durant and all that stuff going on out there, like that's when it's your team, it's not quite as cute, is it? Pete in Delaware on the Kraft video. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. How you doing? First of all, Mike, I think you're on to something because there's someone who's in law enforcement. Cops and prosecutors, they have to sign in and out of the evidence, so I don't believe for a minute that they leaked it or, you know, were thinking of leaking it. I think it's probably somebody from the spa. But, guys, you know what? I think it's time they really looked at maybe Kraft's fighting this because he's got some influence coming from the White House. And I think it's time to look at that because I think that video won't be shown because I think somebody may have a lot more influence than anyone else has had with these other Florida videos. So I think down the road, I think we might find out that he had a friend helping him out.
Pete, I'm surprised it hasn't helped him out already. This is what one of the most surprising things to me, that he's hired all these lawyers and spent God knows how much money already to battle it out with the local sheriff in Martin County. And, you know, go back and forth with these judges, these circuit judges and these county judges in Palm Beach and, you know, slinging mud and filing motions and back and forth. I thought when he hired these guys, George Bush's former White House lawyer, the guy who helped Brett Kavanaugh get ready for a Supreme Court nomination, when he hires a guy like that, I thought you wouldn't be dealing with the circuit judge. You'd be dealing with the governor. And the White House, and it would all be taken care of, and we wouldn't even know what the hell is going on. I am stunned that, Kraft and his attorneys have to sling it out in the local media on the local level with these local sheriffs and judges. That's not what I was expecting on this. That is for sure. To the point where it's too late for Trump to step in. I mean, I don't know. It is funny. The gal that was photographed with Trump at the Super Bowl and was sort of a hang-around with Trump, the Democrats, like I told you, want to investigate her and find her link because her or one of her friends just sort of walked into Mar-a-Lago at one point. You read this story and just, like, talked yes. her way in with some, this is where I'm not exactly sure, like some computer stuff, malware or stuff like this. And so, like, there's a whole thing there. That there's a little tangent to this story as well.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.